Goodwood, written by Holly Throsby and read by Rebecca Robertson.
4 Alvey. Goodwood was a peaceful town before the tragedies. It sat itself quietly between a mountain and a river. After a long stretch of flowing, the river became a lake. The lake was vast and brown and brimming with bream. It was a top spot for fishing, and boats cut silver waves across it on the weekend. As any one of its long-time residents would have said, Goodwood was a glass-half-full kind of town, and weekends were a trusted time. People washed their cars in their driveways of a Saturday, they baked and mowed while their dogs slept in shade. Sundays were dozy and mainly for fishing, and the first one of the month meant a little market in Sweetman's Park, where a few dismal stores sold enormous pumpkins and disappointing jams. A green metal sign announced the township as you drove in, past the bolo, past the oval, under the mountain. Welcome to Goodwood, it said, with the sound of the brown river and the smell of cows and fish. Front doors hung wide open in warm weather. The bar at the Wicko hummed with drinking. Wood-panelled television sets glowed and flickered on living room walls of an evening. Backyard swing sets creaked with children. People died of heart attacks and strokes and cancers and time, lying in their beds at twilight or sitting in their cushioned reading chairs. It was generally considered a good thing that Goodwood was home to small, humble lives that didn't bear much mention. Events that were regarded as dramatic were a minor traffic incident or a lack of rain. It was not a place where you'd expect to find corpses. There were no bodies on the forest floor, entwined like vines, hurtled from a harmless existence by rage or madness or spite. Horror did not visit Goodwood, nor did sorrow, or not in the way we would come to know it so well. I was born in the city, but we only lived there till I was 2, which was when Mum moved us to Goodwood to be close to my Nan and Pop. They had a big brown brick house with a rose garden out the front and a veranda with cane furniture on it. I liked to lie on Nan's daybed and get a good view of the street, where there were never that many people, but of what people there were, everybody knew everybody, no question. Mum had lots of friends. She gardened with company and joined clubs and took minutes. Most mornings in high school, I ate brown toast and Mum told me about her CWA class or the latest meeting at the hall. Mum's cousin Mac was Goodwood's own Constable Mac McKenzie. He sat on our couch commonly and drank Resch's Pilsner. Mum and Mac were very social, which was nice because they mingled a lot and talked a lot, and I liked to hear about people. Everybody knew everybody, no joke. Including me, including Mum and Mac, and Big Jim and Fitzy next door, and Nance who ran the grocer, and my Nan and my Pop. A person in Goodwood was forgiven for knowing the intimate business of their neighbours and their neighbours' neighbours, just for the sheer proximity, as well as the chatter. And the simple fact that seeing and hearing is, to some degree, knowing. There was Helen at the newsagent, having one of her panics, or Smithy at the Wicko, having deep feelings, or Coral from two doors up, who was anxious and dragged her tartan shopping trolley past our house twice a day, the wheels singing like a baby bird. Everything in my memory was regular and pleasant and unremarkable before the disappearances. That was in 1992, when I was 17 and the winter had set in, making our breath misty and our curtains drawn. It wasn't just one person who went missing, it was two. Two very different people. They were there, and then they were gone, as if through a crack in the sky. After that, in a small town like Goodwood, where we had what Nan called a high density of acquaintanceship, everything stopped. Or at least it felt that way. The normal feeling of things stopped. Hope dwindled like an unstoked fire. And before too long, the grief crawled in. A plague of sadness infected our shop fronts. It rested on our awnings and nested in our gardens and gnawed its way through the walls of our houses. First it was Rosie White. She was 18 years old when she dropped off the face of the earth, 1 year older than me. Years are long when you're younger, and each one makes a marked difference.